This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com. Another abbreviated show. Short shows all week, Dave. We got a lot to say that we have to cram into an hour every day because the Mariners are on the East Coast, and it continues with game one of the four-game series in Boston tonight.
It seems like quite the grind this year. 16 in a row. They get a day off. Now we're going, what, nine in a row? Then they're going to come home. I think they get a day off, and then we got the A's next week, and who else? Who's coming next? Wouldn't we go out to Edgar's?
I think it's Houston will be here Houston when we go to Edgar's. Yeah, the 27th, I believe. Yeah, so it's, you know, Boston's playing better. Their record is not great, but you look at what they've done lately, and it's George Kirby and Rich Hill. So we'll see how that one goes. But it feels like a Boston team, despite them starting to turn the corner a bit. Maybe you can. I mean, the goal is a split. You want two of those four. If you can get three, awesome, amazing. But you want to take two, because right now, as bad as things felt on the road, and there have been some moments where you're just going, man, this feels hapless, feels hopeless. They can't hit. They're 3-3 on the road right now.
I know. Well, that's what happens when you come on and react every day, which we do, live and die by these guys. And, yeah, they're at 500 in this. This could be a very successful road trip. It's just funny to me how, you know, the lows and the highs. I would not be a good baseball player. Yeah. I don't think.
You wouldn't pace yourself?
I wouldn't be a good manager. I'd be like, what are you guys doing? Oh, we won. Never mind. Okay.
So, what do you mean we got 130 left?
Yeah. So they're 3-3 on the road trip. That's what the hard part to imagine. But, you know, after last night, Marco just being – he's responsible for like three T-shirts now. I mean, First of all, he's boring. Then he's not sexy. No, first of all, was not on our –
Our dinner table. Dining room.
Yeah. Not on our coffee table. So, yeah, it's his third. He's not sexy now, apparently. But, man, you know, some of the individual performances yesterday, and, you know, when you have guys like Cal Raleigh and Abraham Toro come through in specific situations, it's awesome. But, you know, you also had, you know, your top three hitters having a good night.
Yeah, I mean, that's not to diminish what anybody else did, but to see – you know, France and Crawford came up with a hit. He was 1-for-4, but Ty France, 3-for-5, just crushed that ball. He drove in two. And then you saw him hobbling around the bases a bit. I don't know if you watched the post game interview. He said his hip flexor
bothered him.
What is a hip flexor?
It's no big deal.
Have you had that? Is that on the outside of the hip? Is that on the inside of the?
It's on the front. Well, the hip flexor that I've had before is you know, when you go to lift your knees up.
Yeah.
Which Mitch Haniger would never have a problem with that.
Right.
He doesn't do a side knee thing. But it's just everything's behind him. But, yeah, I mean, that's, to me, what I think is the most common hip flexor. It's just when you raise. You can see him wincing when he's around in second. So, but I don't know, afterwards it didn't sound like it was a big deal.
Yeah, he made it sound like, I'll get some treatment, it'll be fine, not a big deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're worried, though, when you see him limping because – he's the best hitter on this team, and it's not really close. He really is your best hitter. I marvel at watching that guy hit. When he doesn't get a hit in the game, it just feels weird. It is. We've talked about it before. It's like Tyler Lockett having a ball bounce off his hands.
Right.
We're just so conditioned to believe Tyler catches anything that comes near his hands, and Ty France will come up with at least one hit. It's just how you feel because he is that consistent. And I've been doing those baseball videos every week with Brent Stecker and Taylor and having fun with those. And we talked about him in the latest video, just saying, you know, keep this in context. I'm not saying he is Edgar Martinez, is going to have the same career, but you kind of have that same feeling of he's just a professional hitter. He hits all over he hits to all parts of the field. He's not a pull hitter. He doesn't look to, you know, drive everything to the opposite field. He's just going with the pitch. He uses the entire field, and it's not all about power. He's not a pull hungry guy. He's not trying to mash everything. He's just trying to make solid contact, and he is just so consistent with his approach. And he's got a unique, you know, when you watch him in slow motion, you see a lot of guys who they talk about being quiet up at the plate. There's not a lot of movement. Hands are still, body's really still. That's not him. He's kind of waggling that bat around, and then you see him in slow motion kind of cock the arms back and bring them down. There's a lot going on in his swing, yet he duplicates it every single time.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing in baseball. Everybody's different and, you know, their approach and all that. But, yeah, I think it's kind of cool. He starts out with the open stance and then closes it off. And, you know, the other thing is he's not been hit by a pitch, and I can't remember how long.
But did he get hit recently, I thought?
I don't think he's been hit on this series. It might have been.
Yeah, you're probably right. It's the away series. We're so used to that.
Away series, anyway. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he's just, like you said, he's become one of those guys that you just rely on. And then, you know, like you said, the pop-up thing the other day that he dropped off the heel of his glove, just so uncommon for him. His defense is really good. So, yeah, it was a fun game to watch finally last night. And, you know, probably most of it was Marco and, you know, just the way that he approaches the whole thing. I mean, it just that walk that he had. First of all, that was a strike, okay, to Guerrero. He has bases loaded, two mm-hmm. outs. That was a freaking strike. And
the tracer said it was. Yeah. Looked like it was to me. You could tell Scott Servais thought it was.
Yeah. But nobody overreacted, and they were able to get out of it. But he walked in a run there, and I think after the game, the skipper said that was probably one of the best walks with a bases loaded pitch I've ever seen. So
yeah, I mean, I don't know what else he could have done. Right. You're not going to lay one out over the fat part of the plate for him just to mash into the third deck. So you're trying to get that strike without giving him something to square up, and it looked like the perfect pitch to me. I mean, okay, it's everybody, as you said, everybody was like, okay, rather walk the guy than have him do the damage he could have done, and then they shut it down right after that. So it worked out. And by the way, Seth in Fresno is saying that Ty France got hit in New York, but not Toronto.
Oh, really? See, I don't remember that.
Yeah, I can't remember. I mean, it happens so often. Yeah, they all blur together. I'll trust Seth in Fresno, though.
But. Why? Have you ever been to Fresno?
I think I may have driven through. Are you telling me it's bad that people in Fresno are not trustworthy?
I'm not saying at all. I just asked you if you ever been there. You said you drove through. I said exactly.
Why are they not trustworthy in Fresno? Why do they like to lie?
I don't think that they're necessarily trustworthy. I don't think just because he's from Fresno, you take his word for it.
I think Seth is a stand-up guy.
It could be Reno.
I think Seth is a stand-up guy.
You know how I feel about Reno.
I know you do. I know you love it. You love it. But Ty France was, I mean, it was great to see him doing what he did last night. And I got to look at his contract situation. I don't even know where he's at contract-wise, but can we go ahead and lock him up? Can we do that? Is that possible? I don't know where he's at. I don't know what he's making. I'll go look it up. But just every time I see him, I'm like, I don't ever want that guy to wear another uniform.
You know, it's funny. You see, like, he's pretty chatty on first base, but you see a lot of guys talking to him now. Like, I feel like he's made it. Everybody knows who he is. You know, and not everybody in baseball. I mean, the guys at MLB Network will chat him up pretty regularly. They know who he is. They've been watching him. You know, D-Ro loves him, talks about him every morning practically. But for the most part, you know, most fans, I don't think Major League Baseball fans know much about Ty France.
No.
But the players do. The players that he's going against, you can tell that there's lots of respect there.
As there should be. And because of what he does at such a consistent level, you're right. His peers know who he is. Yeah. He's not a flashy guy. He's not a loud guy. He's not a, you know, he doesn't have a goofy haircut or a bunch of jewelry. He just kind of goes out and handles his business. Is pretty quiet. He's not that animated when you see him do interviews. I mean, he's a nice guy, but he's not.
Yeah.
You know, cracking jokes left and right. He seems very to himself and just, I'm just going to go out and hit. That's what I do.
Craziest thing he said to us is that Logan Gilbert's getting froggy.
Was he the one that said that?
Yes, he is. He was. Yeah. So, but I mean, yeah, you're right. He doesn't go out, you know, on a limb. It doesn't say a lot. You know, pretty standard answers when you interview him. Really nice guy. Just total professional. And that's the thing that you want, man. I mean, it's one thing from the media. That's great. You always love that when you're getting loved by the media. But when it's your peers, the guys that you're going against, and somebody that's in your position, especially a good player coming up. And, you know, I always think about Moneyball when they were having, what's the guy's name that from Washington State that played first base?
Olerud.
It was the guy in Moneyball. It was the guy that they got, was a catcher.
Oh, Hatterberg?
Hatterberg. Thank you. Nice call, Bob. You know, Billy Beane's telling him, chat him up. Chat guys up. This is your office, man.
Yeah.
You know, you're a pro. And I feel like every time I see Ty France, he's talking to guys and everything. They're talking back to him. I always think of that. But yeah, yeah. I mean, he's in that group. Like he's
kind of like Barry Sanders.
One of the elite.
He just, but in that he just goes out, does his thing, doesn't celebrate himself. He's not animated. He does. I mean, even when he hits a home run, you don't see him fist pumping around the bases. And you know, where we watch Julio, and he's opposite. Julio's very passionate, very animated when he steals a base or makes a catch or whatever. And I love that too. You know, you love both sides of it. They're polar opposites of each other. Where Ty hits a home run, he just jogs around the bases, you know, slaps high five with guys in the dugout. Nothing that exaggerated. He's workman. He's workmanlike. And here's what that home run sounded like.
Ty France, first pitch, swing on, drive deep to left center field. That thing got carry. It is gone. A two-run rocket by Ty France. And the Mariners have a 4-1 lead. Jumped on the first pitch, a high fastball. Got it into the front row, left center field.
So cool to see. And by the way, the top three in the Mariners order combined 0-24 during the first two games of the Blue Jays series. And then last night, Frazier and France go 6-10, 3 runs, 2 runs driven in.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just when that happens, a guy like Toro needs to step up. You know, you need to get Frazier, you need to get Winker, Suarez. I mean, those guys need to pick him up when that kind of thing happens. You know, a couple of things that, you know, I was going to say, some of the things that I loved the most in that game. You know, first of all, that short hopper to Toro that he handled and got out of his glove, I can't remember what inning that was, just a quick throw to first. That was the first time I've seen him, like, really quick with, you know, the exchange from his glove to his throwing hands. Loved that. Springer and Bo Bichette going down with Sewald on the mound. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he gets Vlad Jr., you know, gets a hit, but then he gets Hernandez to ground out. So just more awesome work from Sewald. And then Toro, the home run, the least glorious home run over the right field fence. Who cares? It counts.
Yeah. It counts. Hopefully it gets him going the right way. You need him. And he's not done it this year so far. He's done it in spots, but you need consistency out of some of these guys. It can't be all Ty France and J.P. Crawford. Yeah. You need these other guys like we talked about.
Especially when those guys go dark.
Yeah.
Because they're going to.
Yeah, it happens. We saw them. We just talked about them going 0 for, what, 27?
24.
Yeah. 24. So, yeah, you need those other guys to step up. And Scott Servais talking about the top of the order really setting the tone.
Great job there. Obviously, offensively, Ty France, Frazier continue to carry the load again. Ty got one up in the air tonight, which was great to see. The big home run there. And Cal Raleigh continues to impress here, doing a nice job behind the plate and then, you know, showing some power as well. So, nice win, and we'll head to Boston.
Yeah, Cal Raleigh with the home run. He's still, you know, I mean, he's improving. It's better than what was going on. He's still at 0.95 for his average and a 1.91 on base. So he needs to continue to trend that way. He's your best defensive catcher of the three.
Yeah,
and I like him best back there. But you need him to be representative at minimum at the plate in order to justify his spot up here when you've got Murphy healthy, and we'll see. It sounds like he's getting really close to being healthy again. And then Terenz playing a much better catcher than he did last year, decidedly better. So, yeah, he's going to have to continue that. Good to see. Hopefully he can continue to, you know, string together some games where he's got a positive impact at the plate. Because otherwise I would assume as Murphy comes back, he might be back down. And then one more from Scott Servais, and we talked about this. Marco Gonzalez was fantastic last night.
Yeah, well, Marco's not sexy. You know, he doesn't throw 95.
We tell
I mean,
that.
Yeah.
On a t-shirt.
I mean, on you know, baseball, everything today's about velocity, you know, and everybody gets excited when Mooney's out there throwing 99, and Logan, you know, almost hits 100 last night. You know, there's a lot of different ways to get people out, and Marco takes pride in what he does. When he steps on the mound, he feels like he can throw 100. But he locates, he changes speeds, and he wins. You know, there's a lot to be said for that.
He's not sexy, Dave.
Yeah, he's not sexy. He's boring. He doesn't want people crapping on his living room coffee table.
Yeah, yeah. It's great. Marco's not sexy. Well, he's effective, though. I mean, 6 innings, 1 run against that lineup is impressive. He walked 3, and he talked about it after the game. Wasn't happy with that. The one walk we talked about, you'll take that over the damage that could have been done. It was a great pitch. He did not get the call, but I think he walked the leadoff the very first batter he faced. So, you know, a couple of those moments, and he talked about it after the game, like, I can't do that. But then he also, it's interesting to hear him talk about his game and how much confidence he has in himself and just, you know, they were talking about the different pitches he's used, and he basically, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the quote in front of me, but just basically saying, yeah, I can pretty much do whatever I want with the ball out there. I just, everything feels right, and I feel like I've found who I really am out there, and I can do anything I want.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing about that you see from him right now, the ridiculous amount of confidence. And then also, remember, he had the pickoff move, too, which was incredible. And he was looking back there so intently at that base runner, I would have thought he would have gotten the message. He was just staring him down the whole time, and I'm like, surely this guy's going to inch back towards the base. And he didn't, so picked him off. But, yeah, that was by the way, you were talking about Cal Raleigh. He's got 4 hits. It's pretty disappointing. 3 of them are home runs.
Yeah.
It kind of, you know, I don't know if Zunino's numbers were that low. No. I remember seeing a stat, though, that he had, I think, 4 hits off of Robbie Ray in his career, and 3 of them were home runs when he was here, when Tampa was here. But you look at Gausman. I was listening to last night, Goldie had a stat that it was 32 innings into the season before he registered his first walk. Gausman, who they got to. So I thought this guy was just phenomenal. And also that was his first home run that he gave up to Raleigh and his 8th extra base hit for Gausman. So Gausman's been incredible. And, you know, especially for Raleigh to get to him. So I just don't think he's ever going to be a guy that's going to hit for average. Do you? I mean, I think he's going to be a really good defensive catcher. And, you know,
if he can hit you, just give me 240. Just get on base. Just don't be a hole. Don't be an automatic out, right? I mean, traditionally, catchers aren't great hitters. Yeah, you've got your exceptions. You got Johnny Bench. You got Mike Piazza. You got Jorge Posada. And, you know, Pud Rodriguez. And, you know, we can go down the list of the guys. But there are more that don't hit that tend to be guys that you lean on their defense and the way they work with the pitching staff. And as long as they can be representative there and, you know, come up with hits here and there, you can live with it. You'd prefer better, but that's just kind of the nature of that position. You're grinding yourself physically through the season, and it just becomes that much harder. So if he can just be representative there and not be that automatic out where, you know, you see his name up there and you're going, oh, boy, okay, well, there's one out. Who's up after him? Okay.
And did he pick somebody off last night? I'm trying to remember.
Did he?
Yeah, it was either last night or, I don't know, in the last couple games, he had a throw that was really good, and he's just solid as can be that way. So, yeah, I'll live with Raleigh going up, and, you know, as long as he's got the power, you'd like to see the average come up a little bit. But, they got you know, on a night where they didn't really need it, they kind of got picked up by a guy like Toro, by a guy like Cal Raleigh.
Well, and hopefully it carries over to this afternoon's game against the Red Sox, game 1 of 4. George Kirby making his 3rd start, so we'll have plenty to discuss tomorrow after that game. And again, we'll turn you over to the pregame show coming up at 3 o'clock. But quickly, before we get into take 2, very cool article written. I haven't had a chance to get to the end of it yet. But John Boyle wrote a story. He had some great access during draft day there, and just really going into great detail about what the Seahawks were doing behind the scenes, and, you know, that they were on the phone with the Giants trying to move up to number 7 to take Ekwonu and move back into the first round at 28 to get it. I mean, there's a lot of detail as to what their plans were and how they felt about players on the board.
Yeah, they've never let anybody inside like that before. One of the things you'll find, they were in on, I can't remember
Ekwonu.
His name now, Ekwonu. And then also one of the pass rushers that they really coveted was Ebiketie. Yeah,
the guy that we didn't be Davis or Johnson or Smith.
No, they have to have these names. These are there's no Daves and Jims and Bobs anymore.
No, but those are boring.
Yeah, but no, it's kind of cool. I like it's a challenge, Bob. It's a challenge, especially if you're calling the game.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's pretty cool. I, you know, wrote a little bit about that they were really sweating it out in those first 9 picks. You know, because you know, they really wanted Charles Cross and they got their guy there, but, you know, if they were going to have to move back, it was either going to have to trade back or they were going to maybe take a tackle that they would have probably taken a lot of heat about, who didn't get picked till the 25th. I think it was Tyler Smith with the Cowboys, 24th or 25th. So, yeah, it's for the first time they're letting people have access to, you know, all of the decisions that were made.
Yeah, and that's something we can dig into later, but just getting a chance to read the first half of it or so, it's just like, wow, this is access we haven't seen with the Seahawks. So we'll definitely get into that. But right now, let's take 2.
Head coach Jimbo Fisher had a strong response following Nick Saban's comments that Texas A&M bought every player on their team.
It's despicable that a reputable head coach could come out and say this when he doesn't get his way or things don't go his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen, and it's a shame that you got to sit here and defend 17-year-old kids and families and Texas A&M because we do things right. We're always going to do things right, but we're always going to be here. And our fans, I apologize to you guys for people saying those things about Texas A&M. I promise you this, there are no violations. There are nothing wrong. It's the second time we've had to do this with grown men.
How about that? He also went on to say, we build him up to be the czar of football. Go dig into his past or anybody that's ever coached with him. You're going to find out anything you want to find out, what he does and how he does it. It's despicable.
Yeah, wow. Well, I mean, look, we've kind of always known that those kinds of things were going on. Now these things are happening. You know, this NIL thing, you know, they're able to buy players, basically. You know, if you get enough boosters that one of them has a some kind of a business or something, whether they use them or not, I mean, it's basically legal now. Yeah. So, you know,
kind of rich for Nick Saban to be the one calling somebody
that's true, because I know that he's done the same thing with NIL players, but this is, we've been having this debate for a long time about paying college players. This is going to be a mess. This is going to be an absolute mess. I can't wait to see what happens. I've talked to a couple coaches that, you know, these kids, 18, are getting like millions of dollars. You know, how's that going to affect them? I mean,
it's going to make them weird, Dave.
They're too young to know what to do with that. And also, if you get like $1 million or $2 million, you're a freshman, you're going to go live with the guys in the dorm, you know?
You're probably going to spend it on dumb things.
No, you're probably going to go somewhere off campus. You know, I heard there was a quarterback at Oregon that never was on campus, nobody ever talked to until it was football practice time. So, yeah, I think you're going to see a lot more of that.
Rory McIlroy leads the PGA Championship at 5-under par through the first round at Southern Hills Country Club in Tulsa.
I know you've kept a close eye on this.
Are you going to play the Masters music, too?
Kyle said I couldn't because it wasn't the Masters,
but I really
wanted to. It's
the PGA Championship, Dave. The Masters music doesn't apply. Would you like to hear it?
Is there PGA Championship music?
I don't know if they have a song that they play every year. I'm not hardcore enough to know that, but I'm sure one of our golf fans, one of our listeners that are hardcore golf fans, know.
Is Rory one of the guys that Kyle likes to dress up as?
No, that's Jordan Spieth.
Jordan Spieth.
Okay. Yeah, he and Salk are big fans of Spieth fashion.
Golfer's fashion.
Look at you. You say that with such disdain. Golfer's fashion.
Thank you, Matt. It wouldn't be complete without this.
Does this make you feel like golfing?
Yeah, I get teary-eyed.
All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberknifeProstate. Coming up, Jerry DePoto spoke earlier today on some Mariner struggles and what he sees coming for the rest of the season. We'll let you hear what he had to say. Coming up, it's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at 3 o'clock, we'll turn you over to the Mariners pregame show. Game one of their four-game series with the Boston Red Sox begins this afternoon. George Kirby on the hill for the Mariners, his third start of his pro career. Meanwhile, looking at what was going on with the Mariners in terms of just struggles with the offense, we've talked a lot about, Dave, and you know, guys just need to live up to the back of the baseball card, as they like to say. Just be who you've been. So far, that has not been the case for a number of these players. And Jerry DePoto on this morning with Salk talked about just learning to, you know, you were talking about you wouldn't be a good manager. You wouldn't be a good player. You'd be hard to pace yourself, if you will, understanding how long the season is. And Jerry DePoto talking about that and saying basically what he's learned is that you got to give chances to guys just to work their way through it.
What I've learned in doing the job that I do is that you're always going to wind up exposed somewhere down the line. There is no risk-free roster. It doesn't exist. And, you know, we have a group of young players and, you know, guys like Jared Kelnick, like Cal Raleigh, you know, who like the young group that has graduated, Abraham Toro, who a year ago, or I guess during the final half of last season, was a key contributor for us. And they've struggled. but we have to provide the opportunity for them to continue to grow and get better.
I so love hearing that from him, because this applies to every sport. I mean, you're going to go in with guys that you feel really good at each position, and then you're going to have guys that somebody's going to have to produce. Somebody's going to have to step up. Somebody's going to have to do something that's not on the back of their baseball card. So, yeah, I feel like we get caught up in that a lot. Like, oh, they didn't address this in the offseason. They didn't address that. They didn't address this in the draft and everything. But, I mean, you know, you there's nobody that goes in knowing 100% at every spot we have got the guy that's going to be there. I mean, you want to have a good idea on how it's going to play out. But, I don't know, I like hearing that. And I think it's hard for fans to hear that. But to me, that really makes a lot of sense. And you know, look, there's nobody that feels that way. I don't care. The best team in the league, they have guys that step up. They have guys that are a surprise, and mm-hmm. And they have guys that people that they sign that people think, oh, that's a terrible sign. And then he ends up flourishing. So, and then you're going to have your sure thing guys like, you know, I hate to say it, but Jared Kelnick, everybody thought by now he would be up and going, and he's not. Same thing with Kyle Lewis. So, That's just the way it goes. And, you know, the criticism, did he do enough going in, you know? I mean, according to him. But, I mean, as far as, like, you talk about the Seahawks draft or you talk about signing guys, you know, did they do enough? You don't really know. You know, they did enough what they think is enough. But, you know, they're the ones running the show. So, I don't know. I just like hearing that from Jerry.
Yeah, I mean, he's right. You got to give these guys chances to work their way through the struggles. I guess it's figuring out at what point do you go, okay, that's enough. We've got to address it. We can't allow that to continue. We need production in this spot, wherever we're looking. If we're talking about, you know, Toro, or if you're talking about Torrens or any of the guys that are struggling, at what point do you say, okay, this is enough of a sample size. We need to get somebody in here as a more consistent producer. It's just not clicking right now. So, you know, there is that fine line of letting them work through it, or just, you know, continuing to run out somebody who is not producing for you for whatever the reasons are.
Especially in baseball, right? I mean, because it takes forever. I mean, in football, you can figure out, and guy gets torched a couple of times at corner, and you're like, okay, let's get this guy out of there. You can't do it. But baseball, it's like you've got to give him a chance, and that's got to be the hardest thing, whether to stick with a guy or not. You know, and just knowing what's best for him. You know, we talk about sending Kelnick down. Maybe that's not the best thing for him, but what else are you going to do with him?
No, I think it was the right thing. I don't think there was any. I think you got to ask yourself what is being accomplished at this level with the struggles. Yeah, you want to see guys. You actually want to see younger guys struggle and just see how they come out of it. It makes them that much tougher, and they learn how to deal with it as their career goes on, and they can refer back to, yeah, I remember my rookie year, and I went from this, you know, 2-for-37 slump, and then this is what I did, and they've got something to draw upon. But you've got to start looking at, there's diminishing returns now. Now we're impacting a kid's confidence, or now there is no positive to come out of this. All we're doing is hurting him moving forward, or maybe, you know, stifling their development, if you will. So I feel like that was absolutely the right move with Kelnick. I don't think there was much to be gained by keeping him up here. But
yeah.
Jerry went on to talk about the tricky part. Is trying to ensure that you've got the depth that you need.
If you go out and you sign a big right-handed banger who needs to play every day, that's effectively, you just block the spot. So it's a very small twist or a nuance, but it does affect the way you build your team. And and the one thing that you can't plan on is that the two of those players are injured and don't play in most of your games. One of them really struggles and winds up back in AAA, which is the more predictable of those outcomes. And then the depth that you had in AAA, they're all hurt too. So, you know, you go out and do the best that you can to put players in place. And then ultimately, and on May 19th, you wind up waking up and you have Steven Souza playing right field.
Oof. That didn't sound flattering, but that was not the plan going in. I think it's more to the point, like, hey, we feel like we got all these outfielders. What are we going to do? Haniger's healthy. Kyle Lewis is healthy. Kelnick's there. Julio's there. We just brought Winker over. I mean, it feels like, okay, we got too many guys now. And then you fast forward and we have who in right field? Steven Souza.
You wake up on the 19th. Well, I mean, yeah, that's just especially the injuries. That would be the hard time. I would be the hardest thing I would have to deal with as a coach. I remember Pete Carroll, his first year here, was like, well, let's just talk about the guys, you know, all the press asked, well, what about this? What? He's got this, that. But let's talk about the guy that's, you know, going to be up next, mm-hmm. because you can't sit there and dwell on it. But I hate it. I hate that Kyle Lewis's knee is screwed up. But yeah, I'm just looking at the box score from yesterday. It looks like Kelenic was 0-for-4.
I thought you said he had a hit yesterday. Weren't you looking at it live?
No, I don't. Well, this is just the box score from yesterday. So yesterday
I don't know
Wednesday,
why you need
May
to lie
18th.
About him. He'll get a hit, Dave. You don't have to lie.
Maybe I read something else. It looked like he struck out 3 times.
Oof.
So
okay.
Yeah. Right.
He's still working it out. Still
I'm not so sure about these stats because it also says he was left on base 3 times. So I'm not sure how that would be.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe he had 7 plate appearances. Three of them were walks.
Yeah.
One more from Jerry, just talking about, you asked whether they're going to be buyers or sellers at the trade deadline.
But where we reside is that to go into the trade deadline as a seller would mean that we no longer truly believe that the core of this team can go win a championship. And we're not there. We think this is what we intended to create. We have to get healthy players back on the field, hopefully starting with Kyle. We get Mitch back. We start seeing some of our bullpen guys rotate back into the mix. And I feel like we're looking at a different team.
Yeah, they better not be sellers. That's a bad sign. If they're selling at the trade deadline, that's you're waving the white flag. That's season over. We're building toward next
still
year.
Off the team.
Yeah, yeah, because I'm still – as much as I said at the beginning of the year, after all the deals were done, I would have loved to have seen them get another bat. You know, coming back to your question, did they do enough? I didn't feel like they did enough offensively. I like that they brought in Frazier and Winker. You like who they are on paper and Suarez, but I felt like they needed another bat. We'll see what they do at the trade deadline. But ultimately, if I'm still of the same opinion, it's playoffs or bust this year. You should be making the playoffs. Coming off a 90-win season, you go into that offseason with a very concerted effort to capitalize on that and build upon that.
Well, the Boston Red Sox are 6-10 at home. So maybe they get a chance to get healthy here. If you imagine they take 2 out of 3 here.
It's 4. It's a 4-game.
Oh, it's a 4-game. Yeah.
Take 3 out of 4.
What if you take 3?
Then awesome.
That'd be 6 wins on the road trip.
And we're feeling really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It washes away the bad feelings you had in Toronto when the offense fell flat.
And my depressed drive into the station the last couple of days, except for today.
Except for today. Comes on the heels of a win. Everybody's smiling. All right. The Seahawks think they have figured out the way to cut down on the learning curve for the defense. We'll tell you what we're talking about next. It's Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Got the Mariners taking on the Red Sox, game one of a 4-game series. George Kirby on the hill. We got the pregame show coming up at 3 o'clock, so stay tuned for that. First pitch around, what was it, 4:07, 4:10, right around there.
Yeah, that's right, Bob.
Yeah, that's right. Take note of that.
Matt'll know.
Matt is the glossary of information we need when it comes to sports. He'll fill in all of the blanks, right, Matt?
It's 4:10, Bob.
Okay, thank you. See?
I know that because of my brain, not because of the calendar.
Because of your love of baseball. That's why you know that.
Because of his brain.
That's
how he knows that.
His sports brain told him 4:10, first pitch. 3 o'clock pregame. So before that, we talked a little bit about this. Clint Hurt, the new face of the defense, he is the new man in charge out there, and he was on with Salk talking about a bunch of different things. And one of the things they touched on is how he's preparing to be that play caller for the. He's been part of a staff certainly and had a big role, but now he's the man in charge. He's the one calling plays.
Right now, everything I'm doing is preparing myself for it. You know, I go in my office, I'll go through, watch game tapes, and I already have the personnels and the down and distances in, and I'll just call games as I'm watching them as things go on and scenarios and whatnot. So those are things that you do to prepare yourself. Obviously, in practice, we'll have call-up periods where I'll get plenty of time at that. But my thought process is I already have I can't say this because I don't want anybody being able to pull this up and listen to it and say, okay, this is how this guy's thinking. But you have a mentality as a play caller and what you believe in. And then obviously, it's something when it's new to you, you got to work through.
It's kind of interesting. I wonder if it's like a kind of a pitcher batter type of thing. you know, what you're going to throw defensively at them in this formation, and then they're going to get in this formation because you think I'm going to do this, but I'm going to do this.
It's the chess game.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting that I love that he's able to explain things, because we talked to Clint. He was one of those guys that was like, he answered every question that, and every, you could understand it. It wasn't a bunch of word salad and mumbo jumbo. And so for him to kind of also let us behind the scene there, that this is what I do. I'm sitting there calling games. I'm watching games going, this is what I do in this situation, you know, and against this defense. And yeah, it's that's awesome. I love that. I think that's going to be the biggest difference this year, is the defensive staff and how they're able to get these guys. I said this all last year, Bob, about Ben Burkervin and how, okay, yes, I know he wasn't playing. He got hurt in the preseason, but he's one of those guys that he'll get to the right spot. Now, is he going to overwhelm you with his physical power? No.
Mm-hmm.
He's got good speed, but he's always in the right freaking place. I mean, yeah. That's, you know, to me, if you can just get your guys in the right place and being more aggressive, it was just so frustrating. I cannot tell you. We've only talked about this a couple of times in the last couple of weeks, but it's starting to come back about how frustrating that defense was last year. This group, these guys, they will get them lined up. They'll get them with him and Desai and Carl Scott. They're going to get these guys lined up, and they're going to get them playing the right way, and then that's a great place to start. I'm not saying they're not going to make any mistakes, but that's so cool. I get more
fired
up. Pretty
sure that's what you just said.
What's that?
Mistake-free football is what we're in store for. Pretty that's sure right. That's what Wyman just said. That's the quote. You brought up Sean Desai, and he brings him up here talking about how he's been a really valuable guy for him to learn from.
The benefit that I have is, you know, some of the ideas and thoughts of what I'm doing now to prepare myself, I'm taking from Sean, because this is what Sean did to prepare himself. It's just been a great resource for me, because obviously last season in Chicago was his first time being a play caller, and I can bounce thoughts and ideas off of him, and he can talk to me obviously about what his experience was and maybe things that he wanted to do differently or things that he really helped, he felt benefited him in going into this.
I like that they've got fresh eyes in there. Clint Hurd has been there, and that doesn't mean he's just going to do whatever Ken Norton did and whatever Pete wants. I'm sure we talked about it yesterday that we could picture him on the sidelines going, why are you doing that? But your job is to support your coordinator, your coach. So I like that he's new to it, can implement his own ideas. But you brought up Carl Scott and Sean Desai, two fresh sets of eyes that haven't been here, that haven't been indoctrinated, if you will, into Pete's philosophy, and this is what he wants, how he does things. No, here's how we see it coming into this situation. We're fresh. We don't have any attachments to anybody who's been here or how they have done things. I think that's great.
Yeah, well, and they're doing things differently. You know, we talked just a tiny bit about how they let us sort of inside the draft room. I think also for the first time, it's an all-time high of connection of personnel guys and coaches. So there's that. And then, you know, as far as we talked to Pete a little bit a few months ago and, you know, about his involvement with the defense, he kind of bristled. You know, he was like, no, this has never been.
We asked about Pete's defense.
Yeah, it was about, no, it's not my defense. I'm not somebody who goes in there and is overbearing and takes over. I mean, I'm the architect, and that's kind of how Clint described it to you and I. But, it's still their call, and they get to do what they want to do. It's just that, you know, I think this is going to be, it's just going to be different. It's going to be a little bit more aggressive. But I think anybody that still thinks that Pete's going to be hanging over that defense and meddling, he's not. He's got the right kind of guys in there. So this is going to be, like I said, the biggest, it's going to be the biggest change. It's much more than any personnel.
You think, and we got about a minute here, but do you think it's going to be noticeable to the casual fan, the fan that hasn't been complaining about linemen dropping into coverage and some of the things we saw about everything happening in front of them? Is it going to be obvious?
Yeah, I think you're going to see more aggressive coverage. You might see people get beat and go, oh, you know, this guy, whatever, get him out of there. But I think for the most part, you're going to see tighter coverage. You're not going to see
sticky, Dave.
What we've all seen over the last 10 years is the middle always being open, always open for business. There's always completions happening there. I don't think you're going to see that.
That'll be good. I'll be happy to not see that anymore.
We'll all be happy.
We'll be very happy to not see that anymore. All right, that does it for us. If you missed any part of today's show or any day for that matter, head to seattlesports.com, click the podcast tab, click on our picture, and it's right there waiting for you. Click subscribe. You get everything just once, that one click, and you don't have to worry about it again. You got the Mariners and the Boston Red Sox coming up, game 1. George Kirby on the hill. We're back tomorrow with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710.